there's always a bit of truth in legends.
Welcome to the Thrawncast, a book club reading through the entire Star Wars expanded universe from beginning to end. I'm Matthew, and joining me on this legendary journey are my co-hosts Amanda.
Hello.
And Sho.
Hi.
This is episode one of season four. We took a break after finishing season three and the end of the Thrawn trilogy, but we're back. Hooray. And we're here to discuss the next book in the EU, Kathy Tyre's The Truce at Bakura. Have you guys read this one before?
Multiple times.
Okay.
I have heard much about this book and have had this book on my shelf for over a decade and yet have never read it.
All right. So we've got all aspects, because I have read it a couple times, but I remember pretty much nothing about it. So
there are passages I can recite.
Okay, so we've got the spectrum covered. Excellent. The Truce at Bakura was published in December of 1993, just 8 months after the release of The Last Command. Rather than move the story of the New Republic forward, Bantam or whoever the powers that be decided that this next book would circle back to before the Thrawn trilogy and tell a story that begins literally the day after the end of Return of the Jedi. You know, our perspective on this is a little different now, given that we have, like, literally hundreds of books and, you know, we can pick up and read Star Wars books set in pretty much any time period we like. But, I mean, what do you guys think about that, their decision? Like, you know, putting yourself in the shoes of a reader at the time, like, do you think it was smart to go back and start to fill in some of the gaps, or would it have been better to expand on what Zahn began in the Thrawn trilogy?
You know, I think coming off the Thrawn trilogy, they were still going to try to gauge reader interest if this was something they wanted to continue to expand on. And being able to go back and shake hands with Return of the Jedi, I think, was a marketing thing. I think it was a way to say, hey, this is the very next thing that happened after the thing you already care about.
Yeah, I mean, the whole conceit of it being, you know, literally the day after Return of the Jedi, like, it feels a little conceity. And so I definitely think that, you know, when Kathy Tyre was given her marching orders, that was probably pretty much the only marching order she got.
Hey guys, there's a mysterious call, and now the rebels have to team up with the Imperials.
Yeah.
The day after the Emperor's death.
So much stuff happening and all go at once. Yeah, I mean, looking at it from a marketing point of view, it seems smart to me because, yeah, I mean, like you said, they were still gauging interest. This was sort of a way to do something different than the Thrawn trilogy. It was also a way to sort of keep them from getting boxed in of just continuing that story on and on and on. And it sort of gave them the license to, you know, jump around a little if they wanted to.
My PR degree says that it's exactly the same thing they did with the new canon. What did they give us? They gave us the Aftermath trilogy right away. They said, Here is what shakes hands with what you already care about in a new and improved flush the old EU down the memory hole version.
And of course, like, the premise is goofy and weird and, like, kind of eye rolly, but, like, Marvel Star Wars comics.
I don't know what you're talking about. Marvel Star Wars comics.
A new thing.
We're
so
flawless.
So far they had had Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Yes.
Terrible. Terrible.
So, so incesty.
Also terrible.
And
whoa.
And I guess, you know, the Ewok cartoons and movies.
Did you just disparage the Han Solo novels?
Marvel Star Wars comics. So all of that stuff is incredibly goofy.
I mean, Zeltrons are problematic.
What are?
Yes, they are.
Right.
Something really that was just addressed in a web fam comic that has a Zeltron character in it, and I'm very glad it was addressed.
What are Zeltrons?
Are you not familiar with Zeltrons?
Oh my god.
Apparently not.
Okay, you know Prince Zizor and whatchamacallit? What is
he? Yeah.
I can't remember what he's called.
Yeah.
Faelene.
Sure.
The Faelene.
Yeah.
You know how they can, like, manipulate emotions?
Right.
With their pheromones?
Right. It's super gross.
Zeltrons
and rapey.
Zeltrons are, like, hot pink people who do that.
And what is this from?
Okay, they're from the Marvel Star Wars comics, but they were reintroduced. I don't know if they ever showed up in the old EU novels, but they were definitely in the whatchamacallit, why can't I remember the name of anything, the John Ostrander
the comic
book? Comic 100 years later.
Oh, Legacy.
Legacy, yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yep. That sounds super bad.
So one of the characters
bad.
In Legacy is Zeltron.
That sounds terrible.
It was a dark, dark time. And so everyone was really excited to get this book.
Yeah.
As we come back around to the topic at hand.
I was going
to
say, how do we get here? We're not past the introduction. We're already wildly off topic. Throncast is back.
Hey, it's not our fault that you don't know what Zeltrons are.
Throncast is back. So, I mean, let's dive in. Chapter one, we get Luke, and he's musing on the fact that it is literally the day after Return of the Jedi, and oh, my bones are so sore from what happened yesterday in Return of the Jedi. Hey guys, have you seen the movie Return of the Jedi? Because some stuff happened yesterday.
Okay, but
it is
like...
a little heavy-handed with that whole, oh, right, I survived force lightning. Like, that's not a thing people do. No wonder I'm a little sore.
And then it's never mentioned again. Like, in the book it obviously is, but, like, do they ever mention it again? Are there any long-term consequences throughout the rest of the EU?
Like what? Like,
no, the consequences last through about 3 chapters of this book, and then he's fine.
And then there's, like, no one... It's not like he's the only person who gets force lightninged for long periods of time in the EU.
Well, yeah,
how many,
like,
people have their skull calcify?
I mean, what would... I mean, were you hoping that, like, in one of the 40-year later books, like, Luke is suddenly diagnosed with, like, force lightning cancer or something?
Yes.
No, that would be awful.
That would be a bummer.
But at the very least, be better, like, than forgetting
him,
it.
Have him take, like, a... Have him have meds or something. I don't know. But anyway...
Like, occasional joint pain when it rains.
Can we just talk about, like, the first paragraph of this book, though?
Please.
Because it's kind of amazing in its own way.
It is, actually. It reads very much like, look, Ma, I'm writing sci-fi.
Yeah, I mean,
oh,
here.
No, even beyond that, though.
Here, I'll do a dramatic reading.
Yes.
Please give it to us.
Above a dead world, one habitable moon hung suspended like a cloud-veiled turquoise. The eternal hand that held the chain of its orbit had dusted its velvet backdrop with brilliant stars, and cosmic energies danced on the wrinkles of space-time, singing their timeless music. This is so bad. Neither noticing nor caring for the Empire, the Rebel Alliance, or their brief, petty wars.
Okay, so it's talking about, like, the grand cosmic dance.
Sure.
And... oh, yes, there's, I guess, the flesh bags, you're doing something boring. And then, like, the next sentence after the paragraph is, oh, but on the petty human scale, there is a fleet of starships. So it's like, yeah, so none of this actually matters, but I guess we're going to talk about what the flesh bags are up to now. I don't know. We're all just dust in the wind and all.
I mean, it's like, it's literally like the zoom in from Contact. I mean, it's just like...
That is exactly what it is. It is the... Lacking a Star Destroyer, it is the way to begin with a Star Destroyer.
No, it feels
except
like
it's terrible.
So much. It's like a joke thing Terry Pratchett would have at the beginning of one of his books.
Yeah. I mean,
it's 100% too much.
It's the kind of thing I would have written.
My favorite thing is where it's like, the galaxy doesn't actually care. The grand cosmos don't actually care. And, oh, these wars are super petty. But I guess we'll talk about them now.
It is the kind of thing I would have written at, like, 15 and thought I was being, like, super deep and meaningful about it.
Oh, I was just about to say, I think I won a writing contest in high school with a very similar paragraph.
So on that petty human scale of perspective, as the book says, we zoom all in to Luke Skywalker, and oh man, he's sore, and he's joking with the technicians, and I'm not feeling this book, you guys. Like, right off the bat.
It starts really slow, I'm not going to lie. Like, you have to get through the first few chapters. And the only thing that gets me through this first chapter in particular is Wedge Antilles. there is heroic, And then there's Wedge Antilles exposing himself to hard vacuum in order to physically stop two connectors from touching and thereby preventing a giant explosion with his bare hands.
Yeah, heroic. Like Luke.
And literally that moment is the only thing that redeems chapter one to me.
See, so like, what got me through it was being like, wait a second. Why is he seeing double? What's up with Luke's skull? Why have I never heard of this when I like read all of those different reference books about the EU and then like all of those different EU books and you know all those times my brother and I have talked about the different books and he's described Truce at Bakura to me, how come none of this ever came up?
Yeah,
because it literally only matters for the first like two chapters and it never comes up again in this book or any other,
which is, it's fine, but like the way it's written is so overly dramatic that like it'd be one thing if he was, like, sore and, like, you know, seeing spots and needed to, like, you know, take some time, you know, to...
A nap.
To heal, yeah.
His brain is calcifying from the electricity.
Right. It's just, like, it's a bit much. It's a little much.
His brain is turning into bone. Just a little much.
Which, I mean, that's not, I don't think, like... I mean, I guess I don't know what force lightning is made of, but, like, assuming it's just, like, lightning, I don't think...
The force, Matthew. It's made of the force.
I don't think lightning would calcify your brain. I think it would probably just, like, cook it, but what do I know? So Wedge...
Some minor nerve damage and take some meds for that.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That makes so much more sense.
So this Imperial drone, like, cruised into Endor again, like, literally the day after the Death Star blows up. And Wedge, you know, goes on out there. Wedge goes on out there, la-di-da, accidentally triggers some kind of self-destruct, and yeah, stops it by literally, like, hopping out of his X-Wing and shoving his hand into the thing, which, I mean, that's a really slow, like, self-destruct mechanism that gave him time to do that, but whatever.
Okay, so it's been a while since I read the Thrawn trilogy, mm-hmm. which is the only thing in the EU before that came out before this.
Yeah.
Did Wedge do anything particularly heroic in that? I just can't remember.
He flew his X-Wing around.
This is the book that starts the legend of Wedge Antilles.
I mean, Wedge in the Thrawn trilogy is pretty much Wedge in the Star Wars trilogy. I mean, like he's in it a little bit more, but he's mostly just like in his X-Wing, you know, shooting down TIE fighters.
He's like ordinary heroic, not like eject from the X-Wing and grab hold of the electrical cables heroic.
Yeah.
Because this is like Brian writes a fanfic levels of heroic by Antilles.
It also is. I guess the theme for this episode in this book is just like a little bit extra, you know? It's just a little too much.
Is this no, you're right. Everything that happens in these first few chapters is a little too much.
Yeah.
Maybe this is like the 1920s tries to be dramatic and goes a little too far drama of Star Wars, kind of like how Courtship of Princess Leia is the Bollywood musical of Star Wars.
Sorry, I get a physical reaction whenever I
I do too.
Hear that book title. I guess, oh, but it's also not doing it very well, in my opinion. Like, there are overly dramatic movies from the 20s that I really like. This, so far, at least, you know, not to bury the lead, but, you know.
I mean, let's be real. Metropolis is a mess, but it's still entertaining, but it's a mess.
True. But it's a well-crafted mess, and the craft here is not really up to snuff.
A well-crafted mess wouldn't have that many subplots, but anyway.
I mean, in terms of like the vocabulary of film, like it looks good and it sounds good and it progresses. I mean, it doesn't sound good.
And the lead actress has a ton of fun.
Yeah, like this. This just feels like on the level of the sentence, even like, which was what you would compare, I guess, to like shots and compositions in a film. Like, it just feels so messy. I mean, I guess that's later on. But yeah, there's a line later on that I specifically called out, and it's just like no editor like passed their eyes over this. I don't know. I'm being very negative about this book. And I feel bad about that. But so far, it's not thrilling me, guys.
So Yeah, that happened. That was chapter one. And they get the message from the Empire that, like, they need help now.
Yeah, so, yeah, the drone
And it turns out that the thing that sent the message is, like, an old, broken down, outmoded, like, where did they even find this thing? Whose mothballs did they get it from underneath?
Because the system...
Which is interesting.
Yeah, I guess the system that that sent it is, like, a recent Imperial acquisition, but it's also, like, far enough out that it's got, like, all, like, the shitty secondhand hand-me-down technology.
Leia even says, like... Leia says even that they apparently were not expecting any competition for that planet.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they also, like, point out that it was, you know, just conquered in the last 3 years or so, which, like, I don't know, I would think that they would have, like, you know, their best stuff out on the front. I don't know. Who knows?
No, in the last 3 years, they've been being defeated by the Rebel Alliance. Like, they can't send the new shiny stuff out to their new acquisitions. They've got to keep it close to home.
Yeah,
to fight
I guess
the Rebels
they've sort of been shifting.
Only 3 years ago, the Rebels started scoring victories.
Yeah, I guess they've sort of been shifting everything back, you know, all the shitty old stuff to the rear lines. That makes sense, I guess. There was a nice moment here where Leia's like, you know, well, if the Empire can't help them, we will. And, like, it's an attitude we see reflected in the TV show Rebels too, where, like, they're not just fighting the Empire, but they're sort of like, I mean, there's a sort of, like, cynical outlook to be had that, like, they're just helping these systems so that they in turn will then help them against the Empire. But there's also, like, a humanitarian, you know, impulse there, I think, especially coming from
Leia.
They're
like the capital G good guys.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, Han,
it's like Troy Denning didn't write this book at all.
You think?
Okay.
I mean, and I do love the visual of, like, everybody is in the conference room in the meeting and Leia's just sort of listening in down in the hut with Han Solo laying on the floor at her feet.
With Luke.
And nobody knows this is happening until Leia takes over the conversation and they're like, oh, right. Yeah. Hi, princess.
I mean,
and the way Han's described as laying on the little couch thing, it's like the Jeff Goldblum pose in Jurassic Park, basically.
But I mean,
he's just, like, laying there, chilled
with
out,
his head in his hand, resting on his elbow, and.
But that's kind of also, like, the kind of sloppy writing that I'm talking about. Like, she doesn't establish that, like, Leia's listening in until Leia speaks up.
Just assume Leia's always listening.
Pretty much.
I mean, I do in my daily
listening
life.
Right now.
Oh, God.
Yes, she is.
Well, and she, like, makes no secret of the fact that she intends to be the person to go. She's like, we would need a high-level negotiator. And, like,
hint.
See the stern look on her face, even though the people in that meeting room can't. Like, yeah. You know that what she's saying is, I'm going. And you can either send an armada or I'm going by myself.
And then Luke's like, well, I want to go too, guys. And they're like, no, you sit there in your Professor X wheelchair and you heal your calcified brain, young man.
Your brain is turning into bone. Oh, my God.
But then he claims that he got a message from Dead Ben Kenobi and they put him in charge of the flotilla anyway.
Yeah,
and he has no experience.
Let's discuss
this. And he
does
realize that.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point he's like, oh, wait, like, being in charge of a wing of X-Wings is not the same as an entire flotilla of capital ships. What am I doing?
It's like that time that in the Clone Wars when Ahsoka is put in charge of a squadron, except instead of it just being, you know, Ahsoka's in charge of a squadron during a minor mission, it's here, Ahsoka, be in charge of a major task force and also protecting all of these people.
Well, you know,
in, like, a really, really sensitive diplomatic situation.
Gotta learn on the fly, man. Gotta just, you know, jump in the deep end and start swimming, I guess.
Yes, this is clearly a better idea than having a Akbar or someone who has at least commanded more than a squadron.
Right? No, Crix Maydeen's like, dude, I'm out. I'm on vacation.
Well, I mean, so chapter two starts and, like, Luke is, like, really, like, focusing on the fact that these aliens who are attacking the Imperial outpost at Bakura, that they take prisoners. And, like, Like, I get it. Tyrus is trying to, you know, foreshadow the fact that they're taking prisoners for weird alien sci-fi reasons. But, like, it doesn't seem that odd to me that the aliens would take prisoners. I mean,
like, we have the word prisoner for a reason. It's because people take prisoners.
I mean, the Empire, you know, uses slave labor. I mean, what's it's like, it's a thing that they would be used to.
I feel like there could have been a one-line fix to that, too, because if they took prisoners and somehow that knowledge ignited some additional force sense in Luke, and he suddenly had a bad feeling about this, like, we wouldn't be so going, like, why is this a big deal?
Yeah.
So why, since when, though, has anyone had in Star Wars had a bad feeling about anything?
I know, right? It's all good feelings.
It would be way too coincidental right there. Just no one ever has bad feelings.
Well, and like Luke display in the previous chapter, like Luke displays like a really like fine control of the Force too. He's like, he's sending his lightsaber off to do his thing while at the same time, like dulling Wedge's pain receptors. Like it's,
oh my God.
He's walking and chewing gum at the same time. And it seems like a little much for like Luke to be able to do that at this level.
I had forgotten how completely overpowered all Jedi, but especially Luke, are in the old EU. Like, oh my God. Remember how he actually uses the Force to fly in The Courtship of Princess Leia?
No.
We don't talk about that book show.
Does he? Oh, God. See, I blocked out.
Yes, I do.
Huge.
And then it's amazing. And then, like, in the Jedi Quest books, there's one point where, like, I think Anakin is able to use the Force to manipulate the molecules so he can, like, use the electric bonds between them to spring off of a wall, and it's like...
I remember that. Oh my God, I remember that. I didn't know that I remembered that until you brought it up.
Look,
I
Anakin's...
remember, like, half that series, but that scene left a very strong impression.
Anakin's midichlorian count
like
is through
the
roof.
This is one of those moments... It feels like you really wonder in that moment when he can do all of those things all at the same time. Like, how long did it take Yoda to divulge a secret and die? Like, was he on Dagobah for months? Like, how much Jedi-ing did he get in that time?
Well, I mean, this is we've discussed this.
So Return of the Jedi is 5 ABY, yes?
Sure.
About 5 ABY.
I mean, I don't know. If you
I
say
think it's
so.
Three. I think it's just right at 3.
I really thought it was 5. Either way, he could have been spending years with Yoda.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've discussed this on the show before. My personal headcanon is that moving at sublight speeds, the Millennium Falcon took months to get from Hoth to Bespin. And so Luke, you know, would have been on Dagobah for those same... I mean, that's really the only way it makes sense, both in terms of, like, spatial distances between planets and also, like, Luke learning how to use the Force.
See, I just figured that their galaxy was much smaller and closer together than ours because, like, it takes 75 years to go from halfway across the galaxy to back to where they started in Star Trek Voyager if they're going at warp 9, while in Star Wars they just have light speed.
Well, yeah, right. And it feels like maybe it took more like 75 days to get from Lost to Bespin.
I mean, light speed is, I think, sort of a hand-wavy, like... It's not, like, literally the speed of light. Like,
that's true. We calculated this on a previous season of the Thrawncast.
We did.
And it turned out to be really wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey.
Hyperspace is whatever the author...
Science fiction with all its parsecs and its space whales and sounds in space.
Yeah. Oh, and then you get J.J. Abrams in the franchise, and he's just like, boop, you know.
Which, all lens flare, which, all the time.
Well, I meant
were
more
there any lens flares in The Force Awakens?
Yeah, there were a couple.
I mean, more than there were in Return of the Jedi.
I mean, there were lens flares in Star Wars before J.J. Abrams came along. My point was that he likes, you know, he did the same thing in the 2009 Star Trek, is that, like, you know, it's Earth to Vulcan in like 6 minutes, and then in Force Awakens, you know, we don't. I mean, maybe they were in the Falcon for, like, a really long time, but it seems really fast that they go from the Resistance base to Luke's hermit planet.
Maybe a week, most.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, like, you know, like I said, it makes sense that Luke was on Dagobah for months. But, I mean, you know, try getting...
That's still a lot of Jedi-ing for, like, the noob.
Exactly. But exactly. Thank you. Really... That was the point we were making. God damn it.
Look at me getting us back on topic.
To be fair, though, they are space wizards who use instinctual knowledge of magic powers.
True.
It's so it's just their instincts, so they don't have to learn it.
Yeah, but
so,
I mean,
like, what was Yoda doing his whole time at the Jedi Jedi Temple, pretending to teach people who didn't need a teacher?
Nice work if you can get it.
Yoda's the biggest freeloader in the history of anything.
Well, and so I feel like at this juncture, that's when you recognize that Mon Mothma and the other, like, old guard of the Rebel Alliance are aware of how super overpowered wizardy a Jedi is, or else they would not have put Luke in command of this large task force.
Well, yeah,
to take on a super sensitive mission when he basically has never done anything even sort of like that before.
I mean, yeah, our original point was that Luke has a dream or a vision, you know, where he's a droid, which, you know, foreshadowing, oh my god. And then he gets a very convenient message from Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm really glad that
dead
Zahn...
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I'm really glad that Zahn put a stop to that. But this is before
that
the Empire.
That was even before this, so Kathy Tears could be like, okay, so apparently Obi-Wan Kenobi's still visiting Luke and giving him super vague messages. I guess I can use him.
I can use that as a convenient plot device.
By the way, spoiler alert, that is not the only Force ghost that will appear in this book.
God.
What?
But so, yeah, so then Luke goes to Rebel Command or whatever, and he's like, hey, guys, I got a message from Obi-Wan. And they're just like, okay, let's send Luke. That sounds totally
right, like,
reasonable
cool.
And normal. Like, there's no pushback whatsoever. They're all just like, that sounds like the most logical thing in the world. Let's do this.
Let's send this, like, super underqualified yet magically gifted child with billions of dollars of command assets that we couldn't possibly afford to replace.
Yeah.
And weren't they, like, just trying to convince him to not go to the meeting at all because his brain was turning into bone?
Yeah. It goes from you can't go to this meeting to, oh, well, Obi-Wan says you have to go, so, or you say that Obi-Wan says you have to go. Like, that seems like the thing that Luke would, like, he goes back to his room, he's like, they're not gonna keep me in my room, and he goes back, he's like, guys, I totally got a Force message from Obi-Wan Kenobi.
He says I need to go to Tashi Station for some power converters.
Look, he signed the note and everything, see? That's totally his signature, don't compare it to anything.
Yeah, Uncle Owen would have shut the shit down, but Mon Mothma's like, sure, whatever.
Pretty much.
Mama is just like, please, just leave. I can't.
And then there's like this convenient Kathy Tires didn't want to include Lando in this adventure.
Oh, so yeah.
She gives us this sort of throwaway with him going, oh, hey, Lando, we said we were going to help you liberate Cloud City, but we can't do that right now because the Empire needs our help. And Lando's like, nah, it's cool. I'm going. I got my own ideas. Peace. I'm out.
Maybe she just knows that, like, how they didn't have Luke in The Force Awakens, in very much of The Force Awakens, because he would totally take over the plot. She knew that Lando would just charm his way throughout the entire book, and nothing would ever get done.
Yeah.
It's
or,
true.
I mean, the
Spoiler
book would
alert,
be solved.
Luke meets a girl later, and if Lando had been there, that girl would probably never have hooked up with Luke, so there is that.
Lando would just be in and be like, These reptile aliens, they're no problem for me, Lando Calrissian, suave, debonair, whatever. Yeah, so I mean, that's a terrible Lando, don't at me. He's got his own ideas.
Someday we'll have enough liquor before we record to do my Lando impersonation.
He's got his own ideas for retaking Cloud City, which we know fail, because the Empire is still in control of Cloud City and heir to the Empire. Like, I mean, maybe she's trying to justify the fact that, like, you know, why the Rebel Alliance didn't help Lando retake Cloud City for his, you know, invaluable assistance in the Battle of Endor.
Okay, maybe Lando did retake it, and then he lost it in a bet again.
To the Empire.
Stranger things have happened to Lando.
I can believe
to me,
that.
It really feels like she just didn't want to write Lando for whatever reason.
Oh, totally.
And so...
maybe she heard about Hologram Fun World and was just like, no.
Oh my god, that's it. She's sending him to Hologram Fun World.
Hologram
Kill
Fun
me now.
World? You guys are referencing things I haven't read, it's not fair.
You're not missing anything.
Hologram Fun World is amazing.
What?
Especially the fact that it was all an anti-drug message.
What?
No. Never mind, that was a different book that mentions Hologram Fun World.
What is this madness I am dipping into?
Lando someday owns a theme park called Hologram Fun World.
Oh my god.
Han and Leia may or may not get married there. Vegas style.
Oh, with, so this like, is the worst. This is from courtship then. This is from courtship then.
No.
No.
This is from some children's books.
Oh, okay. Well, we won't be reading those.
Hey, Brian, I know you're listening at some point in the future. I have a new idea for a podcast that we need Bowers on.
Look, you guys can do spin-off episodes. I'm happy to...
Hey, but even if you never read it, clearly Sho and I will continue to reference these volumes as we both were scarred.
Middle grade Star Wars books are such a huge thing in my life.
So,
like, I didn't even realize until we were recording this episode.
So what you're telling me is we're reading The Glow of Darth Vader next.
Yes.
Oh, God.
I read that one.
So Kathy Tyers then introduces us to Dev Sibwara, who's a human, despite that name. This is Star Wars, after all. And this whole sequence is to give us insight into the... I don't even... How are we pronouncing this? I guess we should figure it out.
What,
now.
The entechment procedure?
No, the Srook. Is that it?
Oh, the Srook. Srook.
Yeah. Is it Srook? Okay. The Srook.
I've always just called him the Srook.
Okay.
Me too.
Yeah, so he's their human agent. His community, his hometown was destroyed by these reptilian aliens, but he was spared because he's force sensitive, and so they raised him to assist in their entechment procedure, which basically takes human being brain waves or whatever and like dumps them into droids to power their smart droids.
Diversity alert, he's also a person of color, very explicitly.
Oh, really?
And so of course he's
So,
like,
of course, he's
alien.
A traitor to the humans.
In the old EU.
This plus Lando
but
not being here.
We get to meet him here so that we are terrified of the bad guys. And we are clear that they are not just the enemy in this case. They are indeed the bad guys. Because this procedure is really terrifying.
Oh, and they even, like, reference a few times that he even gets brainwashed, like, on a regular basis.
Yeah.
To be totally cool with this.
Mm-hmm. And he, like, when he feels himself starting to slip, he, like, goes and requests the brainwashing. I mean, I guess it's terrifying.
Creepy.
It's, I mean, it feels pretty rote to me, honestly. I mean, I can't, like, point to any examples, but, like, this feels like...
Cybermen.
To what?
Cybermen.
I haven't seen Doctor Who, but, like, it feels like well-trod ground in sci-fi.
Borg.
Like, even in the 90s. Yeah, I mean...
Well, I guess Cybermen and Borg, they aren't still having their own thought patterns. Their thought patterns are replaced. So this is like the opposite of that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the whole idea of just the... I mean, not even like the specific nature of what they're doing, but like the human who's been brainwashed to help them do their crazy, gross, you know, invasive alien things. I don't know.
I mean, you're right. It doesn't feel fresh.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it felt fresh when it was new.
Yeah.
But it's still really, like...
It's creepy.
It flips my switch of awful, terrible, icky things that bother me.
When you can...
It's creepy biological technology used to assimilate others, a.k.a. the Zerg and the Yuuzhan Vong. It's just one of those things that makes me twitch.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this feels a little like sort of a tamer version of the Yuuzhan Vong. But I mean,
it's basically exactly the Yuuzhan Vong,
yeah.
Except all contained within one book and thus written somewhat coherently and consistently.
Aw, I like the New Jedi Order.
I'm not a fan of the Mega Series because those characterizations are not consistent in any way.
I mean,
and also made me sad.
As I've said on the show before, like, I read it like when it came out. I barely remember. But I remember being creeped out by the Yuuzhan Vong. More so than I was here. But I mean, it is creepy, and like, you know, when you pair it with Luke's, you know, vision or whatever, that like, oh my god, he's a droid, like, you know, that's creepy. That's, you know, give Tyers points for that, you know, it's creepy and cool. So chapter 3, Luke apparently is like such a terrible like commander that like he's like, let's just jump right into the middle of the system. And his navigator's like, no, that's stupid. The computer's going to be wrong about where the planets are and we'll all die. So Luke deferred to his navigator's wisdom.
Gives her a nod when they don't all die and she rolls her eyes.
because apparently Alliance Master Nav, which is what they're using to like jump, you know, it's what was supposed to predict the orbits of the planets. Like, it was just completely wrong. It's just completely a useless piece of technology, apparently.
That's like, they do, like, make a big deal about properly calculating coordinates for a hyperspace jump in A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, and in nothing else do they care. So at least they acknowledge the importance in this.
Yeah, and I mean, they talk about it more in, they kind of go into it in Rebels sometimes when they feel like it a little, I guess. I don't know. it gets brought up in the books a lot more because it's, you know, you've got sci-fi writers and they like to indulge in that kind of stuff, which I enjoy. And I do actually like the way that Tyres uses three-dimensional space here. You know, she talks about, like, coming in from above the ecliptic and stuff, and, like, I, you know, as much as I like Zahn's books, I feel like he didn't do enough with like three-dimensional space that Tyres does here. So I do enjoy that.
That's kind of funny to me, though. The actual physicist did not do enough with the three-dimensional space.
I mean, to my liking, you know, I like.
Yeah, I know. I know what you get.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Often in Star Wars, everything's treated as being on two axes instead of three.
Right. And I mean, Zahn doesn't completely, you know, follow that, but he does to a certain extent. So they jump in and Luke starts negotiating with the Imperial captain, who's getting his ass handed to him by the Sirook. Han is calling Luke Jr. for some reason when Luke's nickname is clearly Kid. I don't know what movies Kathy Tyres was watching. This is some garbage.
Yes, that is the biggest problem.
This made me irrationally angry, okay?
Luke could have multiple nicknames.
No, it's Kid. I mean, really. It's Kid.
Leia has multiple nicknames. She's both Princess and Your Worship.
And Your Worshipfulness and Your Highnessness and Sweetheart. I mean, he's got a litany of nicknames for Leia, so he's just trying to like expand his Luke vocabulary.
Before he, you know, of course, goes back to Kid, because it's way easier to say.
Right. And weirdly less
patronizing. And besides, isn't calling him Junior really insensitive, seeing who Luke's dad is?
Well, maybe Han hasn't figured that out yet.
I would not have caught. But no. Yeah, that really kind of terrible.
Hey, Anakin Junior. Sorry your dad was a mass murderer. Sucks to be you. That line I mentioned earlier that bothered me so much is here. They're on the bridge of the Flurry, which is Luke's flagship, and apparently not a you know, tasty confection that you get from Dairy Queen.
That's a blizzard. The Flurry is from McDonald's. Get it right.
I don't even fucking know.
Why isn't it called a McFlurry? Or is it?
It probably is. It is. Almost certainly is. Yeah, so there's this, Leia has a line of dialogue, and it's like, near his elbow, Leia's voice spoke softly from over on the Falcon. It's like, it's such a bad line. It's so convoluted.
But it tells you where the speaker is.
Right, but it doesn't say, like, Leia's voice emanated from the speaker near his elbow. It's like, near his elbow. So I start the sentence thinking Leia is, like, behind him. And then it's, you know, her voice spoke softly from over on the Falcon. I'm like, wait, where is Leia? I'm so confused.
Okay, look, I know, Carrie Fisher was short, but I don't think she would have been near his elbow, even if she was standing behind him, especially with him sitting in a wheelchair.
That just makes it even more confusing. Whatever. So the Imperials agree to let the Rebels help them, because this band of Imperials aren't complete morons, apparently. And then Han and Leia get tucked away so that they can be brought back a chapter later and save the day in a really unmotivated
way. Can I mention how angry that made me, though? Because Leia's like, hey, we should go and try to be diplomatic, and acting like a total idiot who doesn't know what she's doing with diplomacy. Just entirely so Luke and Han can be like, no, you're being stupid. Go sit in the corner on, you know, the frozen planet over there.
Yeah, the whole thing just feels like... Leia, you know, Leia, of course, would want to, you know, start negotiations, but she's also, like, not a moron and, like, can see that, like, you know, hey, maybe we should take care of this, you know, alien thing first and not try to, like, run a blockade and do this in the middle of a firefight.
The scene was giving me some minor flashbacks to Crucible. Like, not that bad, but the way that Leia just completely didn't know what was happening, and Han and Luke were like, no, we totally know what's best, and then do.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just, like, it's a way to, like, get the Millennium Falcon out of the way so that then it can pop in at the last minute and save the day when the McFlurry is being threatened.
It's really easy to do that without treating her like an idiot, though. Yeah.
Well, that's true. Like, I mean, all you needed to do was let something break aboard that bucket, which something breaks there all the time. You would have had to go hide and fix it, and then they could have come back right on time.
Yeah,
which or even just been like, hey, been look, you're our valuable negotiator. We need you for backup. And Leia can be like, yes, you are right, because I'm not an idiot. I'm, in fact, the smartest person here.
This is true. This is true.
I mean, the navigator on the McFlurry seems pretty smart, to be fair.
Okay, well, then maybe they should date or something. I don't know, but Leia is way smarter than that.
I mean,
yes, she is.
Put that guy in charge of the fleet. And then, yeah, then there's this weird moment that's, you know, of course it's a reference to the movie because everything's a reference to the movie where, like, Leia, like, shuts 3PO down at, like, the drop of a hat. And it just, it seems, well, like, unnecessarily mean.
I feel like this is a pattern that maybe they fell into on that 2-3 months trip to Bespin, that, like, 3PO would get really annoying and Han would give Leia a look and Leia would turn him off, like, so that he would survive the trip to Bespin, and that maybe this is just sort of a pattern they've fallen into now.
That's true. That actually works with my headcanon. Yeah, that it was like a 6-8-12 month trip that, you know, there was time for that habit to build. All right, I'll buy
Let's
that.
Be even real. If it was like a week, like, he would have died if she wasn't doing that.
Yeah, if it was a 2-3 month trip, 80-90 days is more than enough time to learn when to turn off 3PO.
True.
To not have
seriously.
Him,
no
like,
wonder
gutted with a Hydra spanner.
No wonder R2's constantly sassing him, like, after all that time with him.
That makes sense. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say that we now are about to segue into one of my top 15 all-time favorite scenes in Legends.
Oh, yes.
Well, first, let me just say there's a line here that made me chuckle.
Because Han Solo thinks he is being so smooth.
Yeah.
Well, trying to sneak around and have Chewie set up something romantic.
And so, yeah, he's like, that so-called vacation after the big Ewok party had been worthless. And I just laughed because not in canon.
Yeah, not anymore. And, well, in the new canon, they're on Endor for a lot longer.
True.
All of the events of Shattered Empire, that's like at least a week or so.
But I mean, I think we also...
But yeah, in Legends, they clearly left like the next day. And
who needs diplomacy with their new allies?
But I mean, also, I mean, I think we learned in Aftermath that, like, Ben was conceived like that night.
Turns out that's not true, and Han Solo was wrong about that. About the fact the baby happened that night. It was previously mentioned in Bloodline that it happened on a short sublight trip.
Oh, really?
Slightly later than that. Han Solo just can't seem to count to 40 weeks.
All right.
Also, how many babies are actually born in exactly 40 weeks? Let's be real here.
Yeah.
Like, that's just ridiculous.
But so I just love that this is like Han trying to be romantic and trying to be smooth. Like, he's super trying to pull a Lando here. And he gets Leia back to the cargo hold and it's all going to be fantastic. And then he sees that his assistant, Chewie, has been rather obvious about what his intentions were for that space and time.
I mean, expecting to be there, like a giant heart-shaped bed covered in rose petals.
Yeah, who knows, right? But probably not something that is clearly for shagging. Probably something slightly more subtle. But my favorite part about it is Leia's like, oh, hell yeah, finally, and like pushes him down to have her way with him. Like, she is not at all mortified the way he is. He's standing there, like, blushing, trying to apologize for Chewie, and she's just like, brace yourself, flyboy, and pushes him down.
But also, like, you farmed the job out to Chewie, Han. Like, what were you expecting?
Right? I think one of my favorite things about it is how it then cuts to Chewie, and he's thinking to himself, you know, Han just doesn't have a great aesthetic sense. So I hope I got what he wanted. But
I love that we get a Chewie POV. I love it. I don't think we got one in the Thrawn trilogy, and I love getting a Chewie. Even like it's like a page and a half, but like we got a Chewie POV. I love it.
But it's something, and I think Chewie was quite aware that no matter what else was going on, the princess was a sure thing at this point. So really,
yeah, Chewie's no moron.
Well, and like it can't happen in the bunk room, because if you look at any of the schematics of the Millennium Falcon, you can see that the only bathroom is through the bunk room, and like you don't want to lock the door and lock your co-pilot out of the only fresh air on the ship. So you had to find someplace else to hanky panky.
And those bunks are like submarine bunks in their tininess.
And they have low overhead, and they're not very long, and there's just not a whole lot of room to operate. This is why I maintain that there was not sex on the way to Bespin, even though a lot of my fandom friends are like, but there had to be. And I'm like, where?
I mean,
cargo hold.
Yeah,
obviously.
Wherever Chewie threw down those pillows.
So, ow.
You really think, you really think they needed pillows? I mean, really?
I'm sorry, but I think Han Solo would want to do it right the first time. Yeah. Like, I think after the first time, pillow schmillows. But I think getting there the first time, Han Solo would really want to do it right.
I don't know. Imagine you're, like, stuck on a submarine with your crush for, like, you know, 6, 8, 12 months. Like, you might start out thinking, like, yeah, I want the first time to be right. But, like, you know, after month 3, you're starting to be like, all right, come on, let's go. Come on.
I don't know.
I actually agree with you, which is why my headcanon is that it took about 76, 77 days to get to Bespin. And that's why everyone's smiling as they walk down the gangway and into Cloud City. Han and Leia are like holding hands and grinning because they're like, oh, it's on.
See, I think the only way they like don't like murder each other is through, you know, vigorous.
I mean, I'm a total expert on these sorts of things, but hey, guys, listen to Ace Space. It's about asexuality.
Sorry, we're making the show uncomfortable.
You know what, though? I apologize for that, and yet I feel like we're finally getting our Ace Star Wars character in Rey, so hopefully we can have long discussions about that.
I hope so, man. Start coming out. That would be good. I would really enjoy that. So chapter 4 is a bunch of pew pew. It's mostly okay. There's some awkwardness. I know
I skipped several paragraphs accidentally multiple times.
Yeah, I mean, I put here in the notes that there doesn't really seem to be like a thesis for the scene. Like Luke is using the computer, but he's relying on it too much, except he's not because the computer is wrong. You know, he's micromanaging, which he shouldn't be doing, but then also he's using the Force to micromanage, which is successful.
Oh, and then he totally convinces someone to commit suicide.
With the Force. Yeah. Which is not at all, like, weird.
And then, like, a few paragraphs later, he's worrying about the dark side. But not when he, like, actually changed someone's brain to commit suicide. Oh, no.
I feel like it was right after he did that Han should have used Junior. Unironically.
I mean,
and they all cheered after that, but like, how did they know he had anything to do with it? They just saw two ships crash.
I mean, they probably just were happy that the ships had crashed. I don't know.
No, but then like the captain or the navigator, someone looks at him and makes a and asks like a sarcastic question. He's thinking to myself, oh, they're hoping I'll use some grand Jedi magic and blah, blah, while even commenting that they look sarcastic. It's like, why do you think this, Luke? Why do you think that this is a serious question?
I mean, there is a little bit of, like, imposter syndrome.
How much of Anakin is in you right now?
Well, no, I mean, I was just thinking that, like, I was going to say imposter syndrome, but, like, really it's not that because Luke is an imposter. Like, he shouldn't be in command.
Sorry, Nancy, your boyfriend's the worst.
Yeah, I mean, he's not the worst. He's just, you know, he's the best at what he does, and what he does isn't this.
At least not in this point in his life.
Exactly.
Well, he's been commanding a task force for, like, a grand total of 24 minutes, and so he's not really good at it yet, and that is to be expected, and that poor navigator is probably, like, face-palming nonstop.
Well, and, like, Yeah, the hierarchy of intelligence in this whole thing goes, like, Leia, you know, Navigator and Chewie tied for second, you know, the captain third, and then, you know, down from there.
No, I feel like the captain's second.
Yeah.
Maybe. No, maybe third. I don't know.
But, like, I mean, yeah, this
basically
this whole...
the ladies and the Wookiee.
Yeah, pretty yes. much.
Well, they even, they know that Luke is not the most qualified. Back up a few chapters when they're in this meeting deciding what's going to happen, and they flat out look at Han Solo and they're like, we would offer you this job, but we're pretty sure you won't take it.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, totally not taking that job. I have a job and her worship there. That's what's going to happen. But so they even acknowledge that there's somebody else.
Excuse me.
Pretty much. But they acknowledge that there is someone else on this trip who is more qualified to be commanding.
But see, the thing is, and I mean, I just sort of like dawned on this right now, is that like Luke theoretically does have some command experience. I mean, he was rogue leader in Empire Strikes Back. So, you know.
Yeah, but a dozen X-Wings and like a task force of capital ships, they're not near the same animal.
Well, sure.
It
but
wasn't
I mean,
even X-Wings. It wasn't even three-dimensional space combat. They were air speeders.
Well, no, I mean, I think Rogue Squadron, you know. I mean, I assumed he was Rogue Leader before the Battle of Hoth, is what I'm saying. And, you know, so they
yeah,
probably...
Like, he commanded small unit X-Wing. Tactics. That's
well,
not
sure.
the same thing.
No,
from
I know.
From within
but, like,
the unit, not from outside the unit, which I think is probably why he's micromanaging.
Right, but I mean, she doesn't even bring that up, is my point. Like, there could have been a line drawn between, like, you know, being Rogue Leader and being, you know, Squadron Commander, and he could... you know, be saying like, oh, I don't know if I'm ready for this leap, but I mean, at least there would be some sort of practical like justification for at least elevating him to that point, you know, like he has some command experience. And you know, there could be a whole thing about like, you know, commanding a squadron versus commanding a fleet. But I mean, the way that she writes it, she acts like, you know, he just hopped out of his X-Wing after A New Hope and is suddenly, you know, in command of an entire fleet. And it just, it's weird.
Well, I mean, it's almost as weird as he showed up straight off the farm and wet behind the ears and got handed an X-Wing and said, here, go shoot things.
True, but I mean...
they were kind of desperate.
Yeah.
And low on recruits.
I mean, that's basically like, oh, you can fly? Here, go be cannon fodder.
Or that's like everything where they say like, everyone, you know, with, you know, two eyes and four limbs, here, have a gun.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think, like, the kids on the front line of World War One were exactly, like, you know, trained military professionals.
Well, and actually Rogue One helped that, right? Because now that you're like, this was a hot minute after the Battle of Scarif where everybody yeah. died.
The best and the brightest
the
were.
They have the hardware even. Yeah, sorry, spoiler alert. But the fact that they even have the hardware at that point for Luke to be allowed to take off in.
Yeah, it was probably remarkable. Like a junker, you know.
Why didn't they just like throw him in a Y-wing is the real question.
Those did all get blown up.
Like, why waste an X-wing on him?
Excuse me.
I mean, Biggs, that makes sense to give him an X-wing because he's at least a trained fighter pilot.
But Luke was bullseyeing Womp Rats in his T-16 or something. I don't
know. Two-dimensional versus three-dimensional. Come on.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean...
And besides, he was a teenager bragging about bullseyeing Womp Rats in his T-16. That's not the same thing as actually bullseyeing Womp Rats in his T-16.
Well, I mean, given that, like...
The Princess, the Scoundrel, and the Farm Boy tried to help us out with this, and it's still not...
I mean, the movie...
Really, it's
I
almost
mean,
like it's just a silly sci-fi movie that we're not supposed to overthink or something.
Well, and I mean, people hate on Y-Wings, but, like, I think the movie is assuming that, like, Y-Wings are the good ones. And, you know, they're Gold Squadron, not Red Squadron. And they're going in first, you know? So, you know.
What a stupid plan to have the Y-Wings go first. Come on.
Y-Wings...
They have no maneuverability.
But they're tanks. They soak
you need-
up... Soak up
they're
that damage.
They're not tanks. They're bombers. You need to protect those because those are the things that are doing the damage.
But they also can absorb a lot of damage. Look, I've played Rogue Squadron. I know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'm holding an X-Wing micro machine right now. Let me tell you, this is the battle damage one, and it is not looking good.
No.
Well, I have an X-Wing made of Legos downstairs, and I know exactly how those things are put together.
Okay.
Come on, just take the pieces from the old ones.
So as we said before, the Falcon comes in and saves the day at the last minute, and it's like, it's really weird and unearned and random, and like, it's not like it doesn't even like feel like that big of a threat. Like, it's a weird moment because
I didn't even realize the Falcon had come in until like Luke's like, "This is familiar. Hi, Han." And I'm like, "Wait, what?"
My favorite thing about that though is that they're having their own problems over on Ice Planet, and there's a bit earlier in the book when Han says Leia, or Han's internal monologue is that Leia seems to think she belongs in the co-pilot seat and she would never get him and Chewie out of those seats or whatever. And then they run into trouble, and the first thing he does is he's like, "Leia, fly us out of here. Take us somewhere." And so she's in control, and she's like, "You know where I'm going? Back to the battle. You know why? Because I would like some backup if we're going to keep getting shot at." Like, finally we do get to see her be the smartest person in the room.
Right.
You just have to get that pesky Corellian out of the pilot seat to do it.
And then at least Han thinks to himself, "Gee, that was really fast for me to change my mind about her getting in that co-pilot seat. Oh, well, not going to think about it now."
Also, you know, I couldn't help but think, Han, Chewie's not the one getting replaced in the Falcon cockpit.
Yeah, that is also true. She is taking his seat, not Chewie's seat. But I mean,
no, I meant in The Force Awakens. Like,
oh, well, we won't talk about
it. Oh, my God.
Womp, womp, womp.
Too soon. I'm still reading TFA Fix It Han Survived fanfic about once every other week.
Oh, you poor dear.
I just can't handle it yet. I'm not there. I'll get there. I'm not one of those people who believes that's actually what's going to happen. I just need to live in denial for a little bit longer.
Tell about.
Just watch the beginning of it. Will be them standing over his charred remains.
Okay, no. See, the thing is, he got run through by a lightsaber and then fell off a bridge into the core of a planet that then exploded.
And there turned into a sun.
For he is stardust.
He's a literal
it's Star
stardust.
Wars. Anything is possible.
His charred remains are not possible.
The Bendu flew in, grabbed his body, and flew out.
That,
my favorite and theory is that...
That presupposes that the Bendu gives a shit.
Phasma, like, was evacuating and saw him falling from her ship and saved him in order to use him
what?
Against Kylo Ren later. And so he's somewhere in a back-to-tank.
Like, she would
under
care
Phasma's
enough to
purview.
Do that. Come on.
I mean, I guess if she really, really, really wanted to hurt Kylo Ren, like...
I don't think she cares about Kylo Ren.
Yeah, she doesn't give a shit. But I do like the idea of, like, I'm picturing, like, Cyborg Superman, but Han Solo. Like, you know, a quarter of his head gone and metal and, yeah, good stuff.
Han Solo red, Han Solo blue.
Sure. We want to go completely 90s.
Both go on dates with Lois Lane and she's totally fine with it.
Mm-hmm. So
I mean Leia, whichever.
I sure. mean, well, if he is at least part cyborg, there are all sorts of possibilities there for vibrating appendages, and
good
I
Lord.
Think Leia would be perfectly content with that.
Man, even I didn't go there.
I will go all the places. I will go every inappropriate place.
So will Han. Okay.
I'm so entertained
it's
with how...
It's time to punch
completely
out.
Completely not ace this
is. I apologize.
I'm just entertained with how inappropriate this is.
It's very
this whole
inappropriate.
Podcast.
It's so inappropriate.
Wow.
You, I mean, you listen
to... You not
to,
listen to the first
I was
going to
say, you listen to the first three seasons, right? That's a no.
I had to pet cats. They're very needy cats.
So
them are sleeping on my bed this moment.
What did we think about these four chapters overall? I'm not thrilled.
I feel like
these chapters have their moments, but it's a weak beginning.
Yeah.
But this book is not a strong book. It is an entertaining book, and I was at least in some parts entertained.
Yeah.
I mean, the four chapters gave me flashbacks to both Crucible and Courtship of Princess Leia, so I think that tells you all it needs to.
That doesn't sound good. I mean, I haven't read Crucible, but, like, it's basically, you know, not to pun, but it's pretty legendary in the Star Wars fan community.
Legendary.
I said not to pun.
I live blogged it on my Tumblr when I had a Tumblr. Robot dinosaurs. Named Nargons in Star Wars.
So yeah, I mean it's awkward. Like the characters are mostly right on. I mean, I feel, you know, except for like Leia being stupid for half a minute. you know, I don't know. It's only 4 chapters in. I'm still optimistic. We'll see.
I don't know. I feel like Lando too was a little out of character because he totally would have been like, "Good, you promised help."
Yeah, get me back
you
my.
Are so helping me get my city back.
Get me back my money making, you know, city in the clouds.
Right. It needs to keep him in capes.
Exactly.
Rebel Alliance does not have the budget to keep Lando in the capes to which he has become accustomed.
I don't know. They do have a lot of ponchos.
Yeah, but capes and ponchos, that's the aristocracy versus the proletariat. Lando lands firmly in the cape camp.
Take some scissors, cut off the front of the poncho, bam. Now you have two capes. And now Kip Duran can have his own matching cape with Lando.
Oh, God. We're not there. Please don't make me deal with Kip Duran before I have to. Like, mentally. Yeah.
He has an adorable crush on Lando. That's all you need to know.
No, I mean, I remember Kip. I wish I didn't.
I agree.
All right, so that's
just... If only Corrin had that slight ability with telekinesis. Moving on.
That's chapters 1 through 4. We'll be back next week with chapters 5 through 8. But first, we have a new segment. Lightspeed recommendations, where we each take 60 seconds or less to recommend something that we are currently watching or reading or listening to that's not Star Wars. I'll start, since I'm pretty sure these guys forgot to come up with something. I am currently reading The Way of Kings, a novel by Brandon Sanderson from 2010. He's probably best known for Mistborn and being the guy who wrote the Wheel of Time books after Robert Jordan died. You shouldn't hold that latter part against him, though, because he's actually a pretty good writer. This is the first book of the Stormlight Archive series. It's a lot. I'm like 25-30% in, and I'm still not really sure what it's about. Brandon Sanderson.
It's a slow start, but keep reading. It's so good.
No, I mean, I really liked Mistborn, and like Brandon Sanderson does, you know, really enjoy his world building and his complicated magical systems. And like, you know, the world building here is like I said, it's a little much. Like they use money for lights and lights for money, and it's all like it's very regimented society, and like it's just a lot to take in, and I'm still taking it in, but like. I'm starting to get into the groove with it, and I'm starting to enjoy it more. So that's what I'm reading right now. Amanda, what about you?
Because I am engaged in writing a book in a shared universe, I am actually going back and rereading a lot of the other books in it, and I am currently about midway through the first book in the Kensei series by Jeremy Zimmerman. It stars a teenage, half African-American, half Japanese-Hawaiian lesbian superhero. It's a really approachable read and a really fun book, and I am loving it. I read it a couple years ago, and I'm super glad I've gone back to it because it's really cool.
That sounds awesome. And bonus points for shamelessly hawking your own thing, too.
Well, you know, my own thing is not currently available for purchase, so I can...
No, but you're laying the ground, and, like, I mean, I am respecting your hustle. Like, I'm not, like, seriously, like, props. Show, what about you?
Someone didn't actually tell me what the Lightspeed recs were.
I mean,
other than
if
that,
you,
we were recommending things real quick.
If
so,
you scroll back in the Slack.
I am currently playing Horizon Zero Dawn, as I mentioned earlier. And so far, it's lots of fun. Robot dinosaurs that you fight. I'm also playing Mass Effect Andromeda, which has gotten a lot of kind of meh comments, but I'm really enjoying so far.
Internet?
If you like BioWare, you will probably enjoy it.
You mean the internet overreacted about a Mass Effect game? I believe it.
Right?
I really want to play
Horizon
Zero Dawn.
I really don't care about the facial animations. I'm sorry. I just don't care.
I mean, it's a video game. We're not there yet. You know, but I play Fallout, so I mean, I have to be pretty forgiving of, you know, Bethesda's potato people. So there you go. The Throncast is a Tashi Station podcast. This episode has been brought to you in part by Her Universe and by you, our Patreon subscribers. If you're not already subscribed, maybe check it out. It's at patreon.com/Tashi Station, one word. If you subscribe, you get access to all sorts of cool things, including the patrons only Slack channel, where the three of us
to sign up for that,
as well as many others, we'll chat with you about Star Wars and sci-fi and whatever else comes up. It's fun. For now, though, where else can people find you or your work on the internet, Amanda?
I am on Twitter at Amanda the Ginger. That is also my Tumblr handle, but I promise you don't want to join Tumblr just for me.
Show, what about you?
I am on Twitter. I'm Riorin, R-Y-O-R-I-N. And I am also at ToshiStation.net.
As are we all. I'm on Twitter at MR Bowers. And my other podcast, a movie discussion show, is at www.cinescopers.com. Come back next week when we'll be discussing chapters 5 through 8 of The Truce of Bakura. Until then, remember these words of wisdom from Jedi Master Yoda. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one. Bye!